Live from New York City, it's the Gary Null Show. And now, your host, Gary Null.
Hi, everyone. I'm Gary Null, out on the road, broadcasting live through our studios in New York City, and I welcome everyone. Today, the latest on why carrots are still one of our best choices when it comes to eating healthy. What happens when you eat the average American diet that's based upon monoculture-raised foods, meaning a single crop? Not good. I'll tell you why. Also today, there is a particular colored potato, and it's really good for a particular disease that about 70 million Americans have. Have you heard of the kakadu? K-A-K-A-D-U. It's from Australia. Well, it's got more vitamin C than anything else, and I'll explain why, and we should be using it. And how about the herb allspice? People rarely think about allspice, but they should, and we'll tell you why. We have the latest also in environmental issues on why you should be concerned about gas hydrofracking near you because there's radioactive water. That's right. We haven't been told about radioactive water. I'll tell you why, and especially the people living in different areas where they're fracking right now. Also, vaccine danger. Merck is Big Pharma's vaccine Monsanto. A special commentary on public health issues by Paula Fassa of Natural Society. And then our stressed ecosystem. It's leaving humanity high and dry. But this is talkback, which means we won't have a guest. I won't do a commentary that we normally do every day of the week, one or more. We won't deal with the issues, but we will invite you to call throughout the entire hour. Our number is 888-874-4888. 888-874-4888. Now, I realize some of you can't call because you're on the phone right now. You're listening. I just received the latest numbers. We're way up into the millions of minutes. People listening in North America and in Canada, soon to be worldwide, anywhere in the world, you'll be able to call. But right now, you can call and listen over the telephone or download any of the programs in the archives at 619-550-0869. 619-550-0869. So let's begin, and I'll be taking calls in about 10 minutes. When I first got into the field of health and nutrition, there were no large health food stores, little tiny mom and pops. And the one that I used to go to, one at 84th and Broadway, a man named Leroy who had been a bodybuilder. So he had a small store, but everything was about protein and having big muscles. But he knew nothing about anything other than working out and protein. That was it. So he had like 50 different powders. Then up the street a ways, there was a small health food store with this elderly man. He had a white goatee and white hair. And you go in and he had no fresh produce, but he did have carrots and he'd make carrot juice. That was the only juice that anybody was drinking then, was just carrot juice. But he had a lot of herbal tinctures and he was really into herbs. And that was my introduction to the health food field at that time. Carrot juice. That was it. Well, today, people generally don't drink carrot juice because it's got an awful lot of sugar in it, and it will raise your glycemic level, meaning it'll spike your blood sugar. But eating carrots, that's a different story. That doesn't raise your blood sugar. Here's the latest on why carrots are really good for you, and you should continue to eat them in your food. This study shows that the carrot, in a 10-year study, had heart-boosting benefits. This is from Natural Society, quote, could a carrot a day keep the cardiologist away? It's possible, because heart disease is the number one killer in the United States. We obviously need to look at every potential beneficial solution, but particularly the natural and preventative ones. And while a healthy diet and regular exercise can keep your cardiovascular system fit, specific foods may have greater preventative impact than others. Carrots are one of these foods. A study from the Netherlands illustrates just how beneficial carrots can be in the prevention of cardiovascular disease. Now, this, by the way, was published in the British Journal of Nutrition, a major peer-reviewed journal. They analyzed different fruits and vegetables based upon their color, which ultimately indicates the presence of certain nutrient compounds. They separated produce into four different groups: green, white, red, purple, orange, and yellow. Interestingly, those in the orange-yellow group had the most anti-cardiovascular disease benefits. In particular, those vegetables with deep orange, like carrots, show the greatest benefit. As a matter of fact, carrots were found to be the single most risk-reducing vegetable or fruit tested. Participants in the study were tracked for 10 years. Their diet was carefully analyzed. And those who ate the fewest amount of raw carrots had the least benefit from heart disease. But those who ate the most carrots saw a reduction in overall heart disease of all types, 32%. So I think that's just terrific. And I didn't even know about that study, but that's why every single day, early in the morning, I read the world literature from good quality peer-reviewed literature, so carrots can help you prevent heart disease by 34%. Now, there is a way of juicing your carrots, and it's simple. Don't make it your number one item in the juice. Use apple, celery, cucumber, then carrot. We live in a society that rarely pays attention as to where and how the food is actually produced. If most people saw how gelatin was produced, I doubt that they would ever again eat it. The same is also true for pork, or bacon, or hamburgers, or certainly sausages and bologna and hot dogs. Because everything is artificially created, even the color is artificially created, so you think it's fresher. I've seen the kind of gray mass, putrid smelling meat as it's being processed, but then they add all their spices to it. But then you go out to a farm, and I've just been driving through farmland thousands of miles. And here's what you see. You could drive an entire day and see nothing but corn or soybeans. Or if you go into the northern regions like North Dakota, South Dakota, Upper Wyoming, you'll see wheat. But that's all you see. And that's a bad thing, because that's called mono, meaning singular, culture, foods. I was teaching organic garden and showing people intensive multi-groupings, meaning you have nasturtiums and pansies and garlic and onion and shallots that you grow around the bed. And that acts as a natural pest deterrent. And then, of course, if you should get some pest, you take a garlic mixture with water, about 20 to 1, 20 times water to 1 part garlic. You put in cayenne pepper, and you spray it. Well, that gets rid of the rest of the insects. And as a result, if you go up on GaryNull.com and go to the personal photos, and then go to the photos that talk about or show you the garden, you'll see beautiful rows of crops. Now, those are growing in Florida, where it's in the summertime, where almost no one grows anything, and no loss of insects. Simple technique. But also, you'll see interplanting. That means this year you grow microgreens, next year you grow potatoes, the year after you grow garlic. But you don't keep growing the same crop every single year, and that's the danger of monoculture. Here is what Case Adams of Green Med Info has to say on monoculture. Not so long ago, a family farm produced a myriad of crops for the family and local community, including vegetables, corn, squash, cabbage, and others. Today's farms are a different proposition altogether, and monoculture food production is not only providing a challenge to the land and the environment, it's also increasingly caused hay fever and allergies. Allergy specialists from Francis Nancy University and the Allergy Vigilance Network conducted a large-scale study of children and adults with regard to their sensitivity to the monoculture crops of corn, maize, and rapeseed, which is canola, grown on giant farms in the midst of small towns scattered throughout Europe. The 69 allergy researchers, members of the Allergy Vigilance Network, conducted a study on about 5,000 people, and they were tested for either having an allergy or sensitivity to these crops, or having an immune sensitivity that would likely develop into an allergy. The researchers found that of the 5,372 total people tested, 62% tested for some sort of allergy with symptoms. That's a lot. And so that's not good. Now imagine this. Imagine all the people who work or live around farms that are monocrop farms. So they could be having a depressed immune system. And again, we wouldn't know that if it weren't for this research. I can remember as a child asking my great aunt, "What do you do in the wintertime? Because you can't grow anything." She's, "Oh, yes, you can." I said, "What do you grow?" So I went out there 1 week, and lo and behold, there were greenhouses. And everything you could imagine in the middle of a very bitter cold winter with snow, she was growing, warm as toast inside. Then she had this huge barn that was divided into sections. And up in the second floor, she had all of these fruits drying. And then she had bags, brown paper bags, each one with a name written on it. And these were herbs that had gone from fresh herbs in the garden and wild herbs to dried herbs that she would then make into some form of potpourri or medicinal herb. So 12 months a year, she had everything growing, had giant kegs, 55-gallon kegs, filled with every kind of apple and root vegetable. And hence, 12 months a year, every day of the year, it was like a virtual health food store in there. And I think she had over 60 variety of apple trees alone, about 19 different types of plums. Now, her orchard went on forever, and I really enjoy going over there. She had beehives. By the way, she ran the entire thing herself. Even in her late 80s, she'd be out there every day, vigorous as can be, a vegan, real strong and hearty, a determinist at what she did, but very, very balanced in all things. I learned a lot from her. No one else in my family liked farming. No one else liked to go there because they didn't like her. I liked her. I thought she was great because she'd put you to work. And since if you look in Google under lazy, you'll see half my family laying on a couch looking at you like, "What? What? You want me to do something?" My family were so lazy, they'd just step out of their underwear and walk away, like somehow the underwear is supposed to get up, find the washing machine, and wash itself, and put it neatly in a drawer. So lazy. So anyhow, she wasn't. So now I fully understand why nobody wanted to go to her place. She wouldn't let you sit there. You wouldn't be watching any ball game. She had no television. You'd be doing something, you know, every day. Now just imagine today the ideal homestead. What should it be? Well, first you have to have perfect land, meaning you have to have rich soil, soil that has not been farmed commercially. You have to have an outstanding source of water that is not adjacent to any other contaminating factor like nuclear, gas hydrofracking, or oil. And that is your first two combinations, good, clean, healthy water and good soil. You should have a rolling topography and not flat, so you don't end up with the problems of dry rot. And then you should border it. And you border your whole, all four sides with fruit trees, with your largest fruit trees on the outside, then allowing about 30 feet in between trees so they can grow. But you don't want trees to grow higher than about 15 feet. Keep them trimmed, cut off at the top each spring after they bear their fruit, and then they'll grow thicker. Most people don't know this, and as a result, you'll see trees that are tall, but you can't reach the fruit. So what's the point? So you top them, and that way they grow back thicker. You have beehives on all four sides, and you feed the bees. Don't take their honey. You don't need it. Let them eat their own honey, so therefore they don't leave the hive, meaning they don't swarm. You can collect some of the bee propolis. That's fine. There's always extra of that. They generally put that at the entrance of the hive, and that helps keep them clean and disease-free. You then have raised bed gardens, herbal gardens, with every kind of medicinal herb first, and about, oh, there are at least 50 good medicinal herbs, because what you don't use yourself, you can always sell. And then beside that, you have your culinary herbs, basil, dill, oregano, thyme, all of the different types of basils, and there's at least 20 different types of basils, from cinnamon basil to lemon basil. Again, you can use them yourself, but what you don't use, you can sell to restaurants and farmers markets. And then you have edible flowers. Then you have microgreens and sprouts. All those you put under netting, what is called a 70% net. That means it allows 70% of the sun through, but blocks out 30%, and that's enough for you to grow in the summertime without it destroying the plant by being too hot. And, well, anyhow, I don't want to spend the whole show telling what of an ideal homestead should be, but at the very least, you're going to be probably growing 100 to 150 different types of fruits and vegetables, drying them, juicing them, and having them fresh. That's the future for a lot of people. Not everyone. Not everyone's interested. Not everyone wants to get back to the land. But for those who do, who've done the suburban thing, done the urban thing, and want now to do the rural thing, for probably, I'm going to guess, 2 to 3 million of people, they're in the process doing that now. I'm doing that now also as a way of showing people what to do, and we're filming and photographing every single thing, and then sometime in the next 3 months, I'll have it all up online so you can learn to do it in stages as you choose. But I never will forget what inspired me, common sense. And now you see all these giant farms, and they're just the opposite of what we should be doing. A lot of Americans have high blood pressure. Altogether, probably around 60 million. They take drugs to lower them. Those drugs have serious side effects. What else could we do? One thing, according to the University of Scranton, Dr. Joe Vinson and colleagues, as presented at the National Meeting of the American Chemical Society, is eat purple potatoes. That's right. Especially for potato lovers, and there are a lot of them, but the quality of the nutrients in the purple potato can reduce blood pressure as much as oatmeal without causing weight gain. And so that was good. So purple potatoes, and generally they're small, and leave the skin on. And how you keep the skin from being overcooked is use coconut oil on it. Now, we all want more vitamin C, and vitamin C is just such an important nutrient. Here's the latest plant to give you that. It's called the kakadu, K-A-K-A-D-U. It is a plum, and it's also called the gubinj, G-U-B-I-N-G-E, or the billy goat plum. It's a flowering plant. It's native to northern Australia, and probably you're most likely to find it under kakadu plums. And it's closely related to the almond, more so than the plum. It's a very unusual fruit. as they remain on the plant after ripening. And Australian Aborigines have treasured the plums for thousands of years, according to Michael Ravensthorpe of Natural News. Why? Well, because it helps you heal. Here's the latest research from the Australian Government's Rural Industries Research and Development Corporation publication. Quote, Kakadu's plum's greatest claim to fame is that it contains the highest vitamin C concentration of any food on Earth. In fact, it contains between 1,000 and 5,000 milligrams of vitamin C per 100 grams. Whoa. Let me give you an idea. That's about 100 times or 10,000% more vitamin C than the same amount of blueberries or oranges. And just imagine how it's going to fortify your immune system, help brain function. So the Kakadu plum contains phytochemicals such as ellagic acid and gallic acids. And according to a report in Toxicological Sciences, gallic acid contains significant anti-inflammatory properties enough to treat allergic diseases. And there was a study published in Anti-Cancer Research. It shows that ellagic acid can kill cancer-causing cells and lower estrogen's role in contributing to breast cancer. But it's also good for your skin, and it's very rich in calcium and magnesium, which helps with bones and teeth and the immune system. And it's a natural laxative. It has a very special type of fiber. So that's something I'm going to share with you. I always like to share something that people are not aware of to get you ahead of the curve on things. And finally, let's talk for a moment about a spice that gets very little attention, except at holiday time, and that's allspice. Some of you may have known it as Jamaican pepper or pimento. It's one of the spices used in the Mexican and Central American cuisines. The spice corn is a dried, unripe fruit obtained from the evergreen tropical shrub belonging to a family of pimento. And the pimento tree is a native to tropical evergreen rainforest in Central America and the Caribbean islands. But what does this allspice do? Well, it does a lot. The active principles in allspice have been found to be very anti-inflammatory. It's also warming and soothing. It's a carminative. It's anti-flatulent. It contains essential oils such as eugenol or a phenylpropanoids, which are a class of chemical compounds. That's what gives it that sweet, aromatic fragrance. It also contains tannins, quercetin, resin, glycosides. It has all these wonderful chemicals. And those volatile oils are obtained through distillation process using the spice corn, and the outer coat of the allspice berries is believed to have the greatest concentration of some of the compounds of medical activities. Now, as a black peppercorn, the active principles in the allspice can increase the motility of the gastrointestinal tract and hence help with better secretion of enzymes, help your stomach, and help your intestines. In fact, the eugenol has a local anesthetic and antiseptic property, hence it's used and massaged into gums that are inflamed or infected, and it's used in dental treatment. So it also is known to kill E. coli and salmonella. And it's rich in potassium, magnesium, and iron and copper. So it's very good for your blood. And it has lots of vitamin A and B6 and vitamin C. It's a natural antioxidant. So just another thing that we can use that we don't. Of course, if you eat Indian vegetarian meals, they generally use a lot of it, but the average American doesn't, and that's unfortunate. It has a lot of good benefits because it's an essential oil and it helps us. I'm Gary Knoll. We're going to take a brief break, come back, and then we're going to start on your calls. Our number, 888 874-4888, 888-874-4888, and back in 30 seconds. I'm Gary Knoll. Let's say hello to Kai from Washington, D.C. Hi, Kai.
Thank you for taking my call. Gary, I have a quick question. After searching for...
Hello? Oh, Kai, we got disconnected, so please call back, and we'll be happy to take you right on. Let's say hello to George from Los Angeles. Hi, George. George,
you can hear me okay?
I can hear you fine.
Okay. I have three things. I'll make it short. I've been inundated with ants lately, but I don't want to kill them. I also want to ask you about the cyanide and vitamin B12. And the biggest thing is I got a phone call saying that I needed to take hepatitis A vaccine because of some fruit from Turkey. It was from Costco. So I wanted to ask you first about the hepatitis A vaccine, because I know how you, I'm kind of confused about when you talk about vaccines, if that's all of them in general. And I also wanted to ask you about the dogs with the rabies vaccines that are required. So anyway.
Is it just, George, is it just that you're from Los Angeles? You just added about nine other questions onto your original question.
I'm sorry about that.
All right, let's deal with the
one. I'll go outside and tell everyone else to go away.
Good.
Okay.
The hepatitis is what's important. Hepatitis is an inflammation, and it hits the whole body, but it's primarily relegated to the liver. Now, why is that important? Because your liver does two primary things. It takes all the bad debris in your body, and it filters it. It gets rid of the harmful substances, like dead cells and toxins, hormones, even that yellow brownish substance called bilirubin. That's a byproduct of the breakdown of the old red blood cells. So when that liver is challenged for any reason, like alcohol use challenges it for about 24 hours afterwards, it's not able to function as it should. As a result, the toxins that should be eliminated from your body are frequently not. And that builds up, you become what we call autotoxemic. Now, you can end up with a fever, or weakness, or nausea, or vomiting, or headache, or muscle aches, joint aches. Dark urine is generally a good giveaway. And abdominal discomfort, jaundice. And there are different types of hepatitis. There's hepatitis A, hepatitis B, hepatitis C, D, E, and G. They're all contagious to some extent. Now, you mentioned hepatitis A. It's also known as infectious hepatitis. And in most cases, the liver heals within a few months. And it can be developed without sudden signs or symptoms. It's easily spread from person to person through contact or fecal contamination, which is one of the reasons I don't swim in public pools, because almost everyone who goes in a pool, and especially children, they do not have clean rear ends, and wiping does not clean you. It only gets rid of large pieces of fecal debris. And then when you're in the water and you're getting water in your mouth, you're getting people's feces in your mouth. And that's how we get sick. Most people are not aware of that. The chlorine will not kill that. So Unless someone has proven to me that they've taken a shower and really cleansed, I'm not about to get in the water with them. In any case, hepatitis B is called serum hepatitis, and it's spread through contact generally with infected blood and contaminated syringes, needles, and transfused blood. And it's serious. It can kill you. Hepatitis C is very serious. About 10,000 to 15,000 people a year die of hepatitis C. A lot of people are chronically infected. So what do? Well, we detox. How do we detox? I suggest intravenous vitamin drips with glutathione, because glutathione is the single most important nutrient for your liver when you have hepatitis. Now, you can take reduced glutathione with alpha-lipoic acid and grapeseed extract and glutamine, and that will enhance the reduced form of glutathione being used in the liver. That's good. But I would take alpha-lipoic acid about 5 times a day. I would take beta-1,3-D-glucan. I would also take inositol hexophosphate, or what is called IP6. It has very good effects on protecting the liver, and it's also known as phytic acid, P-H-Y-T-I-C. Also, I would use lots of garlic. I would take SAMe, coenzyme Q10, coenzyme A, which is important for oxygenation of the tissues in the liver, dimethylglycine, the B-complex, B12 at about 1,000 micrograms or 1 milligram, and probably up towards 800 units of mixed tocopherols, and then orally as much vitamin C as I could get in my system, and the essential fatty acids. Turn off inflammation, you have to take the flaxseed oil. Artichoke is great for the liver. I would take burdock and dandelion root, which is great for the liver. I would also include ligustrum, which is powerful for restoring the immune system if you've had inflammation, and milk thistle contains psyllium, of which is a flavonoid, which is very important for helping the liver, olive leaf extract, and philanthius, which is an Ayurvedic herb, Schisandra, which is a Chinese herb, and turmeric. Those are all important, plus lots of juicing each day, mainly green juice. So that's all the time we got, but that's one of your issues dealt with. We got a packed house of calls, but all the best to you out there in California.
Thank you very much.
All right. Now, let's see. Did we get Kai back on from Washington, D.C.? Did she call back in? Not yet? Okay. Well, Kai, if you're listening, please call back in. We're sorry your phone dropped on us. Let's say hello to Carianna from Queens. Hi, Carianna.
Hi, Gary. This is actually Karina.
Karina, hi.
Yes, I'm calling. I have a question for you. I'm a new nurse. I've been working for about 3 months now, and I'd like some advice on basically something to boost my immune system, because it seems like I keep on catching colds from my patients, and I'd like to boost my immune system. I'd like some advice of like what I can do as far as supplements that I can take.
Well, what you want to do is you want to first do an honest assessment of what is the current status of your immune system. And you have to know what your immune level is on all levels before you can improve it.
Okay.
And so I would get a basic immune profile done. Now, once you have your immune profile, then I could very easily suggest things that you could enhance it. For example, you want to get a viral load done. As a nurse, you're going to be exposed to a lot of viruses, and it's not just the viruses you would be concerned about from a needle. It is the viruses that is in a person's body that can be expelled through normal conversations and breathing, like cytomegalovirus, which is in the mouth frequently, that also migrates to the heart. Bacteria is the same. So anything that comes out of another person's body in the way of their saliva, you could be susceptible to. Also, unfortunately, unless you've taken specific courses in holistic nursing, you're working with an extraordinarily limited model of the human body and what it needs. Have you thought about joining the Holistic Nurse Association?
Well, I have, because actually I do. I listen to your show on a regular basis because I do agree. I mean, basically what I've been trained on is just basically, you know, I'm giving people antibiotics and that kind of thing. So, I mean, I have. It's something that I'm interested in. I haven't joined it yet because I don't feel I have, like, you know, experience in general, but it is something. Actually, I would like to get my master's in holistic nursing eventually down the road. But as of now, no, I don't have much, like, as far as resources for holistic nursing.
Okay.
So maybe you can, yeah, if you have any specific information that I can, I would definitely.
I did a documentary on this called Supercharge Your Immune System, Naturally.
Supercharge your immune system naturally. Okay.
Yeah. Once you understand what affects the immune system, like hormones, the moment you become stressed, overworked, or excited or anxious, you start secreting a hormone cascade, cortisol, epinephrine, norepinephrine, and cholecalciferol, and adrenaline. That, in turn, causes fluctuations in blood sugar. It'll adversely affect your melatonin secretion at night. It can throw off your circadian rhythms, and that causes an entire cascade of your immune system.
Right. Well, which is, I also think, because I'm working, like, the graveyard shift. Basically, I work 7 p.m. to 7:30 a.m.
That's a bad shift. I wouldn't do that if I were you.
Yeah,
that can knock years off your life.
Yeah, it's thrown off my entire circadian rhythm. Like,
quit and find another job.
Well, I'm getting transferred to Dave in the month, so that's,
good.
That's the only
okay,
reason.
Okay, but I don't recommend. I do not recommend people work night shifts because I don't care who it is. The science shows that you're probably going to reduce your life expectancy by anywhere from 8 to 10 years by working night shifts.
Yeah, it's terrible. I don't know how people do it. I've only been doing it actually about 2 months because the first month I did the day shift, and it's terrible. Like, my health has declined in 2 months. Like, it's insane.
Well, that's because you're not secreting proper amounts of melatonin. You're not able to get into a proper circadian rhythm. And once you don't get your good quality deep rapid eye movement sleep, that impacts your entire immune system. Therefore, you should look at taking the tryptophan before you go to bed with melatonin, about 1 to 3 milligrams, and also probably about an hour before you go to bed, theanine, T-H-E-A-I-N-I-N-E, about 200 milligrams, which will help you get a better night's sleep, which will help at least enhance your immune function. And then when you wake up, try to have a very anabolic breakfast. Blueberries, pomegranate, dark Montmorency cherry concentrates, flaxseed oil. And I'd be taking flaxseed oil 3 times a day if I were you, because it can help turn off the inflammation in your brain.
Now, would you say flaxseed oil over? Because I do take I take omegas. Because I think those supplements, now would you say flaxseed oil over those or in conjunction with the omegas?
No, you don't need both. And they're both working well in the brain and the body. There's this myth that somehow only the fish flaxseed oil works, and that's not true. The walnut and flax also contain high levels of the omega-3 fatty acids. All right? So
okay.
That's where I would start. And also the more lemon and cucumber and green apple you take in the way of juices, the healthier you're going to be.
Right. Yeah, I do juice. I mean, I do. I normally, I've never felt this. And I think, honestly, that it's from not sleeping at night and, like, the whole dream, like, my sleep schedule around has just made me feel like I'm constantly, like, I have a stuffy nose. I don't normally feel like this. And I think it has a lot to do with also not sleeping at night.
Well, it's all based on the lack of sleep.
Yeah.
And that's not going to remedy itself. You have to get a day job.
Yeah, I know. Right? I'm doing a countdown
all,
for the day.
All the best to you, Katrina.
Yes.
Karina.
You so much. Thank you so much, Gary. Have a good afternoon.
Bye-bye. Let's say hello to Paul from New Jersey. Hi, Paul.
Hi, Gary. My question is regarding juicing. I wanted to know what the benefits are of fresh juices over the powders.
All powders were fresh juices. but right. 97%, thereabouts, of a juice is water. So when you wick off the water, what you're left with was what you would really benefit from having drank the juice to begin with. And as long as it's done without the heat, because what people don't realize, there's called the kiln drying and the roll drum drying. Imagine having a really hot drum, a stainless steel drum, and you pour water on it. It's just going to burst into steam and evaporate. And that's how they make their, frequently make their non-fat dry milk powders. But it also can scorch it and alter the protein and certainly destroy the antioxidants and the enzymes. That's the type of drying I would not do. But there's also a way of drying a liquid to a powder where you're using a science that's very simple. I can't give away the patent to it. But where you, the water is wicked out of a gravitational field, and then the powder just drops at about 88 degrees. So it's a raw living food. But now it's gone into a suspended animation, just waiting for hydrolysis or the addition of water again or some beverage. And that gives you a much higher concentration of all the nutrients, chlorophyll, phytonutrients, antioxidants, everything that was in the juice, except all the excess fibers you're going to find in the powder. And what I would suggest you do is compensate. Have a glass of juice with a tablespoon of powder in it. That gives you the best of both. Okay.
Is that what you're doing? Because during the show, I hear you say frequently, I've just come back from the juice bar.
That's correct. I get spiked juices every day because I always make exotic juices. I make some very, what most people consider some very extreme juices. I don't tell people everything I put in the juice because I don't want them trying what I do because their body has to adapt to it. Just give you one example. An athlete, a triathlete, came in one day, and I was getting my juice, and I drank it down. And he said, give me one of those. And I said, I wouldn't do that. Why not? No, I'm a triathlete. I said, well.
Oh, is this the wheat grass story?
Yeah.
I remember you talking about that. He actually threw up.
He threw up out right outside. Everything he took in came out.
Right.
And I said, you've got to adapt. Gradually, let your body adapt gradually, starting with 2 ounces for a month, then go up to 3 ounces for a month, 4 ounces for a month, but you have to do it in stages. And so anyhow, when I get my juice, I always spike it. And I don't tell people how much I spike my juice with, but it's a lot.
You're spiking it with the powders?
Always.
Okay.
I'm taking more powders than anyone else on the planet takes.
I also wanted to know, based on your concoctions that you've come up with, like greens and grains, green stuff, why haven't you come up with the juice that you advocate so often on the air, which was the apple, celery, cucumber, and you talked about other things like adding ginger?
Because I want people to be able to start with a basic juice and then add to it. And that, you're not going to get enough of that with the cucumber and the celery. There would be so little left when you make a powder from it, it would be cost prohibitive.
I see.
It just, because remember, with celery and cucumber are your diluted juices. That's good for people to start who want to really cleanse and rejuvenate and energize, but they want something that's easy on the system, and that's very easy to take. You start taking that in concentrated amounts, most people's bodies couldn't handle it. So I also have to take into account when I create something, how easy is this going to be for people to adapt to? And what people don't realize is I frequently take a year or longer of testing everything I do on people to see what the reaction is, making sure that it's very compatible. Okay?
Okay, great. Thank you, Gary.
All the best to you. Thank you. And that was Paul from New Jersey. And Todd from Claremont. Hi, Todd. Your turn.
Hi, Gary. How are you?
Good.
I'm an organic farmer. My wife and I, we juice a lot. We preserve foods, you know, all kinds of things that we eat. I guess much healthier than a normal person, but I still have a with all the information and all the different things, I'm wondering if you could help answer a question where kind of what are the three or four main things you should do right off the bat to really improve your health? Is it alkalizing your body? Is it, you know what I mean? Is there, I kind of can't do everything at once, so I figured maybe the most important things would be, you know, alkalizing, exercise, meditation, something like that. But
the number one thing you can do to help yourself is detoxify. That's on two levels. Elimination, eliminating all things, coffee, artificial sweetener, sugars, refined carbohydrates, gluten, dairy, meat, and get rid of all that processed food. Then to rebalance your body, and including, as you mentioned, your pH, you want to go towards a heavy emphasis upon raw, vegan, and juicing. Now, those two together will make an enormous shift in your energy, especially after about a month. And then to gradually increase, not initially, but gradually increase the exercise, and at the same time start doing yoga and meditation. That is simple, not expensive, easy to do.
Right.
All right?
Excellent. And one more question, Gary. One time I heard you mention years ago the ideal blood test to get when you go to the doctor, and I'm a veteran, so like when I go to the VA coming up pretty soon,
if you're
said
a veteran,
there were certain key elements on the blood test.
I would get a mycoplasmic incognitus antibody test.
Okay.
I would get a viral panel, and I would get the your hormone levels done.
Viral panel and hormone levels.
All right.
Thank you very much, Gary.
All the best to you. We have Kai back from Washington, D.C. Hi, Kai.
Hi, Gary. Thank you for taking my call again. I hope we don't have any issue with the phone. Gary, after 10 years of trying to get to the core of my health problems, we finally narrowed it down to parasites and mercury. And I did a liver detox profile, which shows I'm a poor detoxifier. And it explicitly talked about something with poor self-oxidation, which I have no idea what that means, that for some reason my body doesn't break down sulfites, I think, to produce sulfates. I have no idea what that means. I was hoping that you could explain that to me.
But what is your overriding question?
My question is, how does the mercury and, or does the mercury and the parasites impair phase two liver detoxification?
I wouldn't consider mercury the issue. I would consider chelation therapy to get rid of the mercury.
Okay.
The primary objective there.
Okay.
And it depends upon what type of parasites. Remember, parasites are merely worms
okay.
that live in the gastrointestinal tract, but they can migrate to other parts of the body.
Okay.
And including ascarids and hookworms, pinworms, threadworms, tapeworms, roundworms, which are contagious intestinal parasites.
Okay.
They're shaped like earthworms, but smaller. So once you have a stool sample, not a rectal swab, and you're able to do an analysis, then you'll want to purge. And you purge generally by doing a strong fast with caprylic acid from grapeseed extract, and where you take the whole grapefruit, including the seed and the rind, lemons, limes, sweeten it with Manuka honey,
okay,
and vitamin C, and you take that 2 to 3 times a day.
Okay.
And then you keep rebuilding probiotics in the intestinal tract.
Okay.
And then vitamin C, which also is a great purge. There are different herbs like acidophilus is good, not as an herb, but the essential fatty acids turns off inflammation in there. And then you want, there's a product called paracitin. Yeah, P-A-R-A-S-I-T-I-N.
Okay.
It's I don't know the company that makes it, but it's good. And then
okay.
aloe vera, about 3 times a day.
Okay.
Aloe vera whole leaf concentrate, then black walnut extract.
Okay.
That'll destroy a whole spectrum of worms.
Okay.
And you take that on an empty stomach about 3 times a day. Then butternut bark. Good old fennel seed. And senna. Mm-hmm. S-E-N-N-A leaf. These are all good for this.
Okay.
And then calendula ointment or witch hazel can be used to help relieve the itching and irritation externally.
Okay.
And then echinacea root and ficus, F-I-C-U-S,
okay.
and mugwort.
Okay.
And then I would use cayenne.
Okay.
And then pink root.
Okay.
All right.
Okay.
That
so
all
Gary,
the best
are you
to
saying
you.
That the mercury is not so much of a concern as the parasites?
I didn't say it's not a concern.
Oh, sorry.
It is a concern. I just said
okay.
that's how you get rid of it.
Oh, okay.
All right.
Okay.
All
okay. So do I do with the parasites first or the mercury first?
You can do both of them simultaneously.
Okay.
All right. All the best, Kai. Let's say hello to Cayenne to finish. Cayenne, Luann, to finish off our program today.
Hello, Gary.
Hi, Luann.
Yeah. I have an email here from a listener from Seattle, Patricia. She says here that her brother works for a major publishing company and listens to your show in the evening. He downloads it. And he states that you have a big bestseller in the Joy of Juicing book. And her question is this. She says, how do you reconcile so many people drinking soft drinks and coffee and beer versus the tiny percent that actually drink healthy juices? And she says, it seems like we're regressing rather than progressing, and yet this book is a major bestseller.
Mm-hmm. And so what is the question?
She wants to know how you reconcile the fact that there are so many people, you know, I guess, how is it that the book is such a bestseller and yet so many people are still not, they're still drinking soft drinks, coffee, and alcohol?
Have you ever heard of the great attorney Clarence Darrow in the monkey trial, the Scopes trial?
Yes.
He said, I do not pretend to know what many ignorant men are sure of. So I can only give you a speculative but not specious answer, and it would be this. People are more inclined to do what allows them not to change. They might think that they're open for change, but probably 95% of all people in the United States refuse change. It is too scary. The unknown, even if the unknown could save their life, look at alternative cancer treatments. Probably 1% or less of all cancer treatments in the United States are alternative, and yet the failure rate with orthodox therapy for the serious cancers, about 80% of the organic cancers, brain, stomach, colon, pancreas, and breast, is very high. People know that they should be eating healthier, but they don't. We had the highest amount of obesity and diabetes and heart disease per population in the world. Our children are equally unhealthy. We know that we should be selling our homes and getting debt-free, buying junk gold or junk silver and gold, and getting out of risk positions, including in the stock market, which is a bubble, and the bond market, which is a massive bubble, and these are going to collapse. We don't do it. So if you look around and we see an educational system that is corrupted, we see religious systems that are insensitive and not engaged in, most are not engaged, some are, in social help to the larger society. We see politicians that are corrupted by power. We see the multinational corporations choosing to avoid taxes and not support the commons, which that tax money would go to. And we see people spending more time watching television, internet surfing and social media communications than they do with each other in their own relationships, and husband and wives and family together. When we're dumbing down, when we're environmentally illiterate, when we're doing nothing about any catastrophe except proving that we're tough by rebuilding in the wrong place, then do you really think that those people are fully aware of the difference between a juice and a soft drink? That would be the least significant thing to think of. That would be about as appropriate as when she was exiting Atlanta while it was burning with Sherman's army, and in Gone with the Wind, when Scarlett O'Hara went back in to straighten up her house because she didn't want to have an improper house when the Union Army came. So to suggest that we are at a place in our evolutionary social scale where we are so conscious of our health issues that we will make an intelligent selection, we're not making an intelligent selection on anything, on any level, at any time, at any place. Ask the average person why we shouldn't be allowing Israel to bomb Iran, and they can't find Iran on a map. If the United States could not defeat al-Qaeda and the insurgents in Iraq, as we see now, and the Taliban in Afghanistan, what in the world are they going to do with a country that's three times larger than Iraq, with 60 million people, and that are supported by Russia, China, and India, and they're far more capable of defending themselves? Ask them that, because that is relevant. Because if that war happens and the Straits of Hormuz are bombed, then the price of oil will go to $300 a barrel, which means the price of gasoline will go to $15 a gallon. How will that impact a person's life, whether they drink juice, coffee, tea, or soft drink? That's what's relevant. So I look at why we're not making better choices, but those who are making better choices tend to be making better choices in many other areas of their life. It's like the mother and father who educate themselves on vaccine safety or vaccine safe and effective are more likely than to see after the research shows they're not, than to start making better choices about the diet they consume and the environmental issues they take on. Once you open the door to getting out of comfort and willing to look at life as it is, there's an unlimited capacity for growth, and therefore everything becomes new awareness. But until you do that, you stay with what is comfortable. Ideology is comfortable. Hope that answers the question.
Sure does.
Thank you all for listening. I appreciate your tuning in, and you can always go to the archive. Look forward to sharing more on our next program.
The shark, baby.